I am sorry. Finn looked at me sincerely. I know you did that to protect him, and it's my fault. I should have just backed down. But when he pushed you, he shook his head. My instincts kicked in.
He's not going to hurt me, I promised.
I'm sorry for the trouble I've caused you.
Finn glanced back at the door, and I could tell he really didn't want to leave. When he looked back at me, he sighed heavily. He was probably fighting the urge to throw me over his shoulder and take me with him. Instead, he climbed out the window and swung back down to the ground. With that, he turned past the neighbor's hedges, and I couldn't see him anymore. I kept looking after him, wishing that this didn't mean we had to say goodbye. The awful truth was that I was more than a little sad to see Finn go. Eventually, I shut the window and closed my curtains. After Finn left, I found Matt sitting on the steps, looking bewildered and pissed off. He wanted to yell at me about Finn, but he couldn't seem to understand exactly what had happened. The best I could get out of it was that he vowed to kill Finn if he ever came near me, and I pretended like I thought that was a reasonable thing to do. The next few days, school dragged on and on. It didn't help that I found myself constantly looking around for Finn. Part of me kept insisting that the last week had been a bad dream, and that Finn should still be here, staring at me like he always had. On top of that, I kept feeling like I was being watched. My neck got that scratchy feeling it did when Finn stared at me for too long. But whenever I turned around, nobody was there. At least, nobody worth noting. At home, I felt distracted and ill at ease. I excused myself from supper early on Thursday night and went up to my room. I peered out my curtains, hoping to find Finn lurking around somewhere nearby, but no such luck. Every time I looked for him and didn't find him, my heart hurt a little more. I tossed and turned all night, trying not to wonder if Finn was still hanging around. He'd made it painfully clear that he'd soon have to move on and end this assignment. I wasn't ready for that. I didn't like the idea of him moving on when I hadn't. Around 5 in the morning, I gave up entirely on sleep. I looked out the window again, and this time, I thought I saw something. Nothing more than a shadowy blur of movement in the corner of my eye, but it was enough to indicate that he was out there, hiding nearby. I just needed to go out and talk to Finn, to make sure he was still there. I didn't even bother changing out of my pajamas or fixing my hair. Hastily, I climbed out onto the roof. I tried to grab onto the branch and swing to the ground like Finn had. As soon as my fingers grabbed the branch, they slipped off, and I fell to the ground, landing heavily on my back. All the wind had been knocked out of me, and I coughed painfully. I would have loved to lie on the lawn for 10 minutes while the pain subsided, but I was afraid that Matt or Maggie might have heard my fall. I gingerly got to my feet and rounded the hedges toward the neighbor's house. The street was completely deserted. I wrapped my arms tightly around myself to ward off the cold that seeped in and looked around. I knew he had been out here. Who else would be moving around out here just before dawn? Maybe my fall had scared him away. He might have thought it was Matt. I decided to walk a little farther down the street, investigating everyone's lawn for a hidden tracker. My back ached from the fall, and my knee felt a little twisted and weird. That left me hobbling down the street in my pajamas at 5 in the morning. I had truly lost my mind. Then I heard something. Footsteps? Somebody was definitely following me, and based on the dark chill running down my spine, it wasn't Finn. It was hard to explain how I knew it wasn't him, but I knew it just the same. Slowly, I turned around. Chapter 6. Monsters. A girl stood a few feet behind me. In the glow from the street lamp, she looked ravishing. her short brown pixie cut spiked up all over. Her skirt was short, and her black leather jacket went down to her calves. A wind came up, blowing back her coat a bit, and she reminded me of some kind of action star, like she should be in The Matrix. But the thing that caught my attention the most was that she was barefoot. She just stared at me, so I felt like I had to say something. "Okay, I'm going to go home now," I announced. "Wendy Everly, I think you should come with us," she said with a sly smile. "Us?" I asked. But then I felt him behind me. I don't know where he had been before that, but suddenly I felt his presence behind me. I looked over my shoulder, where a tall man with dark, slicked back hair stared down at me. He wore the same kind of jacket as the girl, and I thought it was neat that they had matching outfits, like a crime-fighting duo. He smiled at me, and that's when I decided that I was in trouble. "That's a really nice invitation, but my house is like 3 houses down." I pointed toward it, as if I didn't think they already knew exactly where I lived. "So I think that I should probably just get home before my brother starts looking for me."
"You should have thought of that before you left the house," the guy behind me suggested.
I wanted to take a step forward to get away from him, but I thought that would only encourage him to pounce on me. I could probably take the girl, but I wasn't so sure about him. He was like a foot taller than me.
"You guys are trackers?" I asked.
Something in the way they stared at me reminded me of Finn, especially when I'd first met him.
"You're a quick one, aren't you?"
The girl smiled wider, and it didn't sit right with me. They might be trackers, but not the same kind as Finn. Maybe they were bounty hunters, or kidnappers, or just big fans of chopping up girls into little pieces and disposing of them in a ditch. Fear crept through me, but I tried not to let on.
"Well, this has been a blast, but I have to get ready for school. Big test and all that."
I started taking a step away, but the guy's hand clamped painfully on my arm.
"Don't damage her,"
the girl insisted, her eyes flashing wide. "She's not to be hurt."
"Yeah, ease up."
I tried to pull my arm from him, but he refused to let go. I had already decided that I wasn't going wherever they wanted to take me. Since they were under some kind of instruction not to hurt me, it would give me the advantage in a fight. I only had to get a few houses down, then I'd be at home, where Matt kept a gun under his bed. I elbowed the guy in the stomach as hard as I could. He made a coughing sound and doubled over, but didn't let go of my arm. I kicked him in the shin and moved to bite the hand that was gripping me. He yowled in pain, and then the girl was in front of me. He had let go of me, and she tried to grab me, so I punched her. She dodged, so my fist just connected with her shoulder. Then I was off balance, and the guy grabbed me around the waist. I screamed and kicked at him as hard as I could. Apparently, he got tired of that, so he dropped me on the ground. I was on my feet instantly, but he grabbed my arm again and turned me so I was facing him. He raised his hand and slapped me harder than I had ever been hit before. Everything went white, and my ears started ringing. Then he let go of me, and I collapsed backward on the grass behind me. "I said not to hurt her," the girl hissed.
"I didn't. I was subduing her,"
the guy growled and looked down at me.
"And if she doesn't knock it off, I'll subdue her again, but harder this time."
My neck ached from the force of his hit, and my jaw screamed painfully. A throbbing spread behind my left eye, but I still tried to stagger to my feet. She kicked me then, not hard enough to really hurt, but enough so I'd fall back down. I lay on my back, staring up at the sky. From the corner of my eye, I could see a light flick on in the window of a house behind me. We were making enough of a ruckus to wake the neighbors, even if we weren't close enough for Matt to hear us. I opened my mouth to scream and yell for help, but the male tracker must have realized what I meant to do.
Little more than a yelp had escaped my lips when I felt his foot press down hard on my throat.
"If you make a sound, I'll make this much harder for you," the guy warned me. "I might not be allowed to snap your neck, but I can make you wish you were dead."
I couldn't breathe, and I clawed at his foot, trying to get it off me. When he asked if I promised to be good, I nodded frantically. I would have agreed to anything that let me breathe again. He stepped back and I gasped for breath, taking in big gulps of air that burned my throat.
"Let's just get her to the car," the girl said, exasperated.
He bent down to try to pick me up, but I hid away his hands. I was lying on my back and I lifted up my legs. I wasn't really trying to kick him, but I was going to use my legs to push him back if he came near me. In response, he hit my calf hard enough to give me a Charlie horse, which I gritted my teeth through. He put his knee on my stomach, holding me down so I couldn't fight as much. When he tried to grab me, I pushed him back with my hands so he grabbed my wrists, pressing them tightly together with one hand.
"Stop," he commanded.
I tried to pull my hands free, but he just squeezed tighter and my bones felt like they were about to snap.
"Just stop. We're going to take you no matter what." "Like hell you are," Finn barked, his voice coming from out of nowhere.
I swiveled my head so I could see Finn. I had never been so happy to see anyone in my life.
"Oh, damn it," the girl said with a sigh. "If you hadn't spent so much time fighting with her, we'd be out of here by now." "She was the one fighting with me," the guy insisted. "Now I'm the one fighting with you," Finn growled, glaring at him. "Get off her. Now."
"Finn, can't we just talk about this?"
The girl tried to sound sultry and flirty as she took a step closer to Finn, but he didn't even look at her.
"I know how you feel about duty, but there's got to be some kind of agreement we can come to."
She took another step closer to him, and he pushed her back so hard she stumbled and fell backward.
"I hate fighting with you, Finn."
The guy let go of my hands and took his knee off my stomach. I took the opportunity to try to kick him in the nuts, and reflexively, he whirled on me and smacked me hard again. Before I could even curse him for hitting me, Finn was on him. I had rolled onto my side, cradling my injured face so I could only see part of what was going on. My attacker had managed to get to his feet, but I could hear the sounds of Finn punching him. The girl leaped on his back to stop him, but Finn elbowed her in the face. She collapsed to the ground, holding her bleeding nose.
"Enough!"
The guy had cowered down, his arms shielding his face against any more blows.
"We're done. We'll get out of here." "You better fucking get out of here," Finn shouted. "If I see you anywhere near her again, I will kill you."
The guy walked over to the girl and helped her to her feet. Then they both headed down the street to a black SUV parked at the end of the block. Finn stood on the sidewalk in front of me, watching them until they got in and sped off. A moment later, he knelt down next to me where I was lying on the ground. He placed his hand on my cheek where I had been slapped. The skin was tender, so it stung a little, but I refused to show it. His hand felt too good to push away. His dark eyes were pained when he looked me over, and as terrible as everything had been up until this moment, I wouldn't have traded it for anything because it led to this. To him touching me and looking at me like that.
"I'm sorry it took me so long."
He pursed his lips, clearly blaming himself for not getting here sooner.
"I was sleeping, and I didn't wake up until you were completely panicked."
"You sleep in your clothes?"
I asked, looking at his usual dark jeans and button-down shirt combo.
"Sometimes."
Finn pulled his hand from my face.
"I knew something was up today. I could feel it, but I couldn't pinpoint it because I couldn't stay as close to you as I would have liked. I never should have slept at all."
"No, you can't blame yourself. It was my fault for coming out of my room."
"What were you doing out here?"
Finn looked at me curiously, and I looked away, feeling embarrassed. I thought I saw you, I admitted quietly, and his face went dark.
I should have been here, he said,
almost under his breath. And then he got to his feet. He held out his hand and pulled me to my feet. I grimaced a little, but tried not to show it.
Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm fine, I forced a smile. A little sore, but fine.
He touched my cheek again, just with his fingertips, sending flutters through me.
He studied my injury intently, and then his eyes met mine, dark and wonderful. It was at that moment that I knew I had officially fallen for him.
You're going to have a bruise, Finn murmured, dropping his hand. I'm sorry.
It's not your fault, I insisted. It's mine. I was being an idiot. I should have known, I trailed off.
I'd been about to say that I should have known it was dangerous, but how could I have possibly known that? I had no idea who those people were.
Who were they? What did they want?
Vitre,
Finn growled, glaring down the road as if they would appear at the sound of their name. He tensed up as he scanned the horizon, then put his hand on the small of my back to usher me away.
Come on, I'll explain more in the car.
The car?
I stopped where I was, making him press his palm harder on my back until he realized I wasn't going anywhere. His hand stayed there, and I had to ignore the small pleasure of it so I could argue with him.
I'm not going in the car. I have to go home before Matt realizes I'm gone.
You can't go back there,
Finn said, apologetic but firm.
I'm sorry. I know this is directly against your wishes, but it's not safe for you there anymore. The Vitre have found you. I will not leave you here.
I don't even understand what this Vitre is. And Matt is...
I shifted uncomfortably and looked back toward my house.
Matt was tough as far as people went, but I wasn't sure what kind of match he would be for the guy who attacked me. And even if he could take him, I didn't want to bring that element into the house. If something happened to Matt or Maggie because of me, I could never forgive myself. Red and blue lights lit up the neighborhood as a police car drew near. The neighbors must have called the cops when they heard me fighting with the trackers. It apparently hadn't sounded dangerous enough to warrant sirens, but the lights were flashing a block away.
Wendy, we must hurry,
Finn insisted. The police expedited his urgency, so I nodded and let him take me away. Apparently, he'd run to my rescue this morning because his car was still parked at his house 2 blocks away. We jogged toward it, but when the cop car got closer, we ducked behind a shed to hide.
This is going to break Matt's heart, I whispered as we waited for the police to pass us.
He'd want you to be safe,
Finn assured me. And he was right. But Matt wouldn't know I was safe. He wouldn't know anything about me.
Once Finn was certain we were in the clear, we stepped out from behind the shed and hurried on to his car. Do you have a cell phone? I asked.
Why?
Finn kept glancing around as we approached his car. He pulled his keys from his pocket and used the remote to unlock it.
I need to call Matt and let him know that I'm okay, I said.
Finn held the passenger door open while I got inside. As soon as he got in the driver's seat, I turned to him.
Well, can I call him?
You really want to?
Finn asked as he started the car.
Yes, of course I do. Why is that so surprising?
Finn threw the car in gear and sped off down the road. The whole town was still asleep, except for us and the neighbors we'd awoken. He glanced over at me, debating. Finally, he dug in his pocket and pulled out his cell phone.
Thank you,
I smiled gratefully at him. When I started dialing the phone, my hand shook and I felt sick. This was going to be the hardest conversation of my life. I held the phone to my ear, listening to it ring, and I tried to slow my breathing.
Hello?
Matt answered the phone groggily. He clearly hadn't woken up yet, so he must not know I was gone. I wasn't sure if that was a good thing or not.
Hello? Who's there?
I closed my eyes and took a deep breath. Matt?
Wendy!
Matt instantly sounded alert, panic in his voice.
Where are you? What's going on? Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm fine. My cheeks still hurt, but I was fine. Even if I wasn't, I couldn't tell him that. I'm calling because I'm leaving, and I wanted you to know that I'm safe.
What do you mean you're leaving?
Matt asked. I could hear him open his door, and then the bang of my bedroom door being thrown open.
Where are you, Wendy? You need to come home right now.
I can't, Matt. I rubbed my forehead and let out a shaky breath.
Why? Does somebody have you? Did Finn take you?
Matt demanded. In the background, I could hear Maggie asking questions. He must have woken her up with all the commotion.
I'll kill that little bastard if he lays one hand on you.
Yeah, I'm with Finn, but it's not like you think, I said thickly. I wish I could explain everything to you, but I can't. He's taking care of me, though. He's making sure I'm safe.
Safe from what? Matt snapped. I take care of you. Why are you doing this?
He took a deep breath and tried to calm down.
If we're doing something wrong, we can change it, Wendy. You just need to come home right now.
His voice was cracking and it broke my heart.
Please, Wendy.
You're not doing anything wrong. Silent tears slid down my face, and I tried to swallow the lump in my throat. You didn't do anything. This isn't about you or Maggie, honest. I love you guys, and I would take you with me if I could, but I can't.
Why do you keep saying can't? Is he forcing you? Tell me where you are so I can call the police.
He's not forcing me, Matt. I sighed and wondered if this phone call had been a bad idea. Maybe I just made it worse for him. Please don't try and find me. You won't be able to, and I don't want you to. I just wanted you to know that I'm safe, and that I love you, and you never did anything wrong, okay? I just want you to be happy.
Wendy, why are you talking like that?
Matt sounded more afraid than I had ever heard him before, and I couldn't be certain, but I think he'd started to cry.
You sound like you're never coming back. You can't leave forever. Whatever is going on, I can take care of it. I'll do whatever I have to do. Just come back, Wendy.
I'm so sorry, Matt, but I can't. I wiped at my eyes and shook my head. I'll call you again if I can. But if you don't hear from me, don't worry. I'm okay.
Wendy, stop talking like that,
Matt shouted.
You need to come back here. Wendy!
Goodbye, Matt. I hung up to the sound of him yelling my name. I took a deep breath and reminded myself that this was the only thing I could do. It was the only way that I could keep them safe. And it was the safest thing for me, which was exactly what Matt would want. If he knew what was going on, he would agree with this completely. It didn't change the fact that it was absolute torture to say goodbye to him like that. Hearing his pain and frustration so evident over the phone.
Hey, Wendy, you did the right thing,
Finn assured me. But I just sniffled. He reached over and took my hand, squeezing it lightly. Ordinarily, I would have been delighted by that. But right now, it took everything I had to keep from sobbing or throwing up. I wiped at my tears, but I couldn't seem to stop crying. Finn pulled over to the side of the road.
Come here,
he said gently. He put his arm around my shoulders and pulled me closer to him. I rested my head against his shoulder, and he held me tightly to him. Chapter 7. Vor Evening. Taking a deep breath, I finally managed to stop crying. Even though Finn no longer had his arm around me, we still sat so close we were practically touching. When I looked at him, he seemed to become aware of this and moved his arm farther away.
"What's going on?" I asked. "Who were those people? Why did we have to run away?"
Finn looked at me for a moment, then pulled back on the road and took a breath.
"That is a very long answer, one that is best explained by your mother."
"My mother?"
I didn't understand what more Kim would know about this. Then I realized he meant my real mother.
"We're going to see her? Where is she? Where are we going?"
"For evening," Finn explained. "It's where I live, where you'll live."
He gave a small smile, meant to ease my concerns, and it did, a little.
"Unfortunately, it's about a 7-hour drive."
"Where is it?"
"It's in Minnesota, along the Mississippi River, in a very secluded area," Finn said.
"So, what is this for-evening place we're going to?" I asked, watching him.
"It's a town, sort of," Finn said. "They consider it to be more of a compound, but in the way the Kennedys have a compound. It's just a glorified gated community, really."
"So, do people live there too? Humans, I mean?"
I was already wondering if I could bring Matt along with me.
"Not in the sense you're talking about."
He hesitated before he continued, and glanced at me out of the corner of his eye.
"It's entirely Trill, Trackers, and Mainskleeg. There are about 5,000 who live there in total, and we have gas stations, a small grocery store, and a school. It's just a very small, quiet community."
"Holy hell!" My eyes widened. "You mean there's just a whole town of trolls? In Minnesota? And nobody ever noticed?"
"We live very quietly," Finn reiterated. "And there are ways to make people not notice."
"You sound like you're in the mafia," I commented, and Finn smiled crookedly. "Do you guys make people sleep with the fishes or something?"
"Persuasion is a very powerful ability," he said, and his smile disappeared.
"So you have persuasion?" I asked carefully.
Something seemed to upset him, and as I expected, he shook his head.
"Why not?"
"I'm a tracker. Our abilities are different."
He glanced over at me, and sensing that I would just ask more questions, he went on.
"They're more suited for tracking, obviously. Persuasion isn't particularly useful in that arena."
"What is useful?" I pressed, and he sighed wearily.
"It's hard to explain. They're not even real abilities in the sense of the word."
His jaw ticked, and he shifted in his seat.
"It's more instinct and intuition. Like the way a bloodhound follows a scent, except it's not actually something I can smell. It's just something I know."
He looked over to see if I was getting it, but I just stared at him blankly.
"For example, when you went to visit that woman the other night."
That woman being someone who I had thought was my mother my entire life.
"I knew you were far away, and I knew something was distressing you."
"You can tell when I'm upset? Even when you're not around me?" I asked.
Finn nodded.
"As long as I'm tracking you, yes."
"I thought you said you weren't psychic," I muttered. "Being able to know my feelings sounds awfully psychic to me."
"No, I said I couldn't read minds, and I can't."
Then, with an exasperated sigh, he added,
"I never have any idea what you're thinking." "I can't even tell everything you're feeling," he went on. "Just distress and fear. I need to be alert to situations when you're in danger so I can help you. My job is to keep you safe and bring you home."
"How do you know how to track people like me? Before you find us, I mean."
"Your mother has things from when you were a baby. A lock of hair, usually,"
Finn elaborated.
"I get a vibe from that, and the parents usually have a general idea where you are. Once I'm around you, I start to get a real scent of you.
and that's it.
An odd warmth filled my chest. My mother had things for me. Kim had never treasured anything about me. But someone out there had. She had taken a lock of hair when I was born and kept it safe all these years.
Is that why you stared at me all the time? Because you were feeling this vibe?
I thought of the way his eyes were always on me, and the way I could never make sense of his expression.
Yes.
There was something about his answer. He wasn't lying exactly, but he was holding something back. I thought about pressing him further, but there were so many other things I wanted to know. So, how often do you do this?
You are my 11th.
He looked at me to gauge my response, so I kept my face as expressionless as possible. I was a little surprised by his answer. It seemed like an incredibly time-consuming process, for one thing. And he seemed fairly young to have done it 11 times. Plus, it was unnerving to think there were that many changelings out there. How long have you been doing this?
Since I was 15, Finn answered.
15? No way, I shook my head. So you're trying to tell me that at 15 years old, your parents sent you out into the world to track and find kids? And these kids, they trusted you and believed you?
I'm very good at what I do, Finn replied. Matter-of-factly.
Still, that just seems unreal. I couldn't wrap my mind around it. Did they all come back with you?
Yes, of course,
he said simply. Do they always? With all the trackers, I mean?
No, they don't. They usually do, but not always.
But they always do with you? I persisted.
Yes.
Finn looked over at me again.
Why do you find it so hard to believe?
I find this all hard to believe.
I tried to pinpoint what was bothering me.
Wait, you were 15? That means that you were never... You weren't a changeling. So not all Trill begin life as changelings? How does this work?
Trackers are never changelings.
He rubbed the back of his neck and pursed his lips.
I think it's best if your mother explains the changelings to you.
How come trackers aren't ever changelings? I questioned.
We need to spend our lives being trained to be a tracker,
Finn said.
And our youth is an asset. It's much easier to get close to a teenager when you are a teenager than it is when you're 40.
A big part of what you do is building trust. I eyed him with renewed suspicion.
Yes, it is,
Finn admitted. So at the dance, when you were being a total dick to me, that was you building trust? For a split second, he looked pained. Then his normal emotionless expression returned.
No, that was me putting a distance between us. I shouldn't have asked you to dance. I was trying to correct the error. I needed you to trust me, but anything more would be misleading.
Everything that had transpired between us had just been because he was trying to get me to the compound. He had been keeping me safe, getting me to like him, and when he noticed my crush developing, he had tried to put me in my place. It stung painfully. So I just swallowed hard and stared out the window.
I'm sorry if I've hurt you,
Finn said quietly. Don't worry about it, I replied icily. You were just doing your job.
I know that you're being facetious, but I was.
He paused.
I still am.
Well, you're very good at it. I crossed my arms and continued to stare out the window. I didn't feel much like talking anymore. There were still a million questions I had about everything, but I'd rather wait and talk to somebody else, anybody else. I thought I would be too anxious and excited to sleep, but after about an hour into the drive, I started nodding off. I fought to stay awake until I realized the ride would go quicker if I just slept. When I opened my eyes, the sun was shining brightly above us. I had curled up on the seat with my knees pressed against my chest, so my whole body felt sore and achy. I looked around, Then I sat up and stretched, trying to work the kinks out of my neck.
I thought you were going to sleep the whole ride, Finn said.
How far away are we?
I yawned and slouched low in the seat, resting my knees against the dashboard.
Not far.
The scenery had started giving way to tall, tree-lined bluffs. The car rolled up and down through the hills and valleys, and it really was stunningly beautiful. Eventually, Finn slowed and we turned, driving to the top of a bluff. Soon the road curved down again, winding among the trees. Through them, I could see the Mississippi River cutting through the bluffs. A large metal gate blocked our path, but when we reached it, a guard nodded at Finn and waved us on. Once we were through, I saw beautiful houses dotting the bluffs. They were all heavily obscured by trees, which gave me an odd sensation that there were more homes than I could actually see. But every one of them appeared luxurious and perfectly positioned to make the best of the view. We pulled up in front of an opulent mansion perched precariously on the edge of a bluff. It was pure white, with long vines growing up over it beautifully. The back, which faced the river, was made entirely of windows, but it seemed to be held up by weak supports. While stunningly gorgeous, the house looked as if it could fall off the edge at any moment.
What's this?
I took a break from gaping at the house to look back at Finn. He smiled in the way that sent shivers through me.
This is it. Welcome home, Wendy.
I had come from money, but it had never been anything like this. This was aristocratic. Finn walked me to the house, and I couldn't believe that I'd truly come from this. I had never felt so small or ordinary in my entire life. With a house like this, I had expected a butler to answer the door. Instead, it was just a kid. He looked about my age, with sandy hair cascading across his forehead. He was very attractive, but that made sense because I couldn't believe that anything ugly ever came from a house like this. It was too perfect. He seemed confused and surprised at first, but when he saw Finn, an understanding came to him and he smiled broadly.
Oh my God! You must be Wendy!
He opened the massive front door so we could come in. Finn let me go in first, which made me nervous, and I felt embarrassed with the way this kid smiled at me, especially considering my pajamas and bruised cheek. He was dressed like any other normal kid I had gone to school with, at least in the private schools, and I found that weird, as if it would be more natural for him to run around in a tuxedo first thing in the morning.
Yeah, I mumbled awkwardly.
Oh, sorry. I'm Reese.
He touched his chest, gesturing to himself, and turned back to Finn.
We weren't expecting you this soon.
Things happen,
Finn explained noncommittally.
I'd really love to stay and talk, but I just came home for lunch, and I'm already running late on getting back to school.
Reese glanced around and looked at us apologetically.
Elora is down in the drawing room. You can get yourself there, right?
Finn nodded.
I can.
All right, sorry to rush out like this.
Reese smiled sheepishly and picked up the messenger bag lying by the front door.
It was really nice meeting you, Wendy. I'm sure I'll be seeing a lot more of you.
Once he hurried out the door, I took a moment to take in my surroundings. The floors were marble, and a giant crystal chandelier hung above us. From where I stood, I could see the breathtaking view through the windowed back wall of the house. It was floor-to-ceiling glass, and all I could see were the tops of trees and the river plummeting below us. It was enough to give me vertigo, and I was on the other side of the house.
Come on.
Finn walked ahead of me, turning down a decadently furnished hall, and I scampered after him.
Who was that?
I whispered, as if the walls could hear me. They were lined with pictures, a few of which I recognized as being painted by master painters.
Reese.
Yeah, I know, but is he my brother? I asked.
No,
Finn replied. I waited for more, but apparently that was all he would say on the subject. Abruptly, he turned and entered a room. It was the corner of the house, so two of the walls were entirely glass. One interior wall had a fireplace,
and hanging above it was the portrait of an attractive older gentleman. Books lined the other interior wall. Elegant antique furniture filled the room, and a velvet chaise lounge sat poised in front of the fireplace. A woman sat on a stool in the corner, her back to us. Her dress was dark and flowing, just like the hair that hung down her back. A large canvas was set on the easel before her. The painting was only partially finished, but it appeared to be some kind of fire, with dark smoke filtering over broken chandeliers. She continued painting for several minutes while we stood there. I glanced over at Finn, but he just shook his head, trying to quiet me before I voiced a complaint. His hands were clasped behind his back, and he stood rigidly straight, reminding me of a soldier.
Alora?
Finn said cautiously, and I got the sense that she intimidated him. This was as unnerving as it was surprising. He didn't seem like he could be intimidated by anyone. When she turned to look at us, I forgot to breathe. She was much older than I had expected, in her 50s, probably. But there was something stunningly elegant and beautiful about her, particularly her large, dark eyes. In her youth, she had probably been unbearably attractive. As it was, I could hardly believe that she was real.
Finn!
Her voice was angelic and clear, and her surprise was endearing. With a graceful move, she swiftly stood up, and Finn did a small bow to her. It confused me, but I clumsily tried to copy it, and this caused her to laugh. She looked at Finn, but gestured to me.
This is her?
Yes, it is.
There was a hint of pride in his voice. He had brought me here, and I was starting to realize that I must have been a very special request. When she moved, she looked even more poised and regal. The length of her skirt swirled around her feet, making it seem as if she floated rather than walked. Once in front of me, she inspected me carefully. She seemed to disapprove of my pajamas, especially the dirt stains on my knees I had sustained during the fight. But it was the bruise on my face that caused her to purse her lips.
Oh my!
Her eyes widened with surprise, but her expression lacked anything resembling concern.
What happened?
Vitre,
Finn answered with the same contempt he had used when speaking that term before.
Oh?
Elora raised an eyebrow.
Which ones? Jen and Kira,
Finn said.
I see.
Elora stared off for a minute, smoothing out the non-existent wrinkles in her dress. Sighing tiredly, she looked to Finn.
You're sure it was only Jen and Kira?
I believe so,
Finn said, thinking hard.
I didn't see any sign of others, and they would have called for backup had there been any to call. They were quite insistent on taking Wendy. Jen got violent with her.
I can see that.
Elora looked back at me.
Just the same, you are lovely.
She sounded almost awed by me, and I felt a blush redden my cheeks.
It's Wendy, isn't it?
Yes, ma'am. I smiled nervously at her.
What an ordinary name for such an extraordinary girl.
She looked displeased for a moment, and then turned to Finn.
Excellent work. You may be excused while I talk to her. Stay close by, though. I'll call when I need you.
Finn did another small bow before leaving the room. His level of reverence made me uncomfortable. I wasn't sure how to act around her.
I'm Elora, and I won't expect you to call me any different.
I know you still have so much to get accustomed to.
I remember when I first came back.
She smiled and gave a light shake of her head.
It was a very confusing time.
I nodded, unsure what else to do as she gestured expansively to the room.
Sit. We have much to talk about.
Thanks. Uncertainly, I took a seat on the edge of the sofa, afraid that if I really sat down on it, I would break it or something. Elora went to the chaise lounge where she lay on her side, letting her dress flow around her. She propped her head up with her hand and watched me with intense fascination. Her eyes were dark and beautiful, but there was something familiar about them. They reminded me of a wild animal trapped in a cage. I'm not sure if Finn has explained it to you, but I am your mother, Alora said. Chapter 8. Family. It was impossible. I wanted to correct her. There must be some mistake. Nothing as stunning and elegant as that could spawn me. I was awkward and impulsive. Her hair was like silk, and as it had been pointed out to me before, my hair was like a Brillo pad. I couldn't be related to her. Ah, I see he did not, Alora said. From your bewildered expression, I take it you don't believe me. But let me assure you, there is no mistaking who you are. I personally chose the Everly family for you and delivered you to them myself. Finn is the best tracker we have, so there is no way you could be anyone else but my daughter. I'm sorry, I shifted uncomfortably in my seat. I didn't mean to question you, I just... I understand. You're still used to your normal human way of being. That will all change soon. Did Finn explain anything to you about Trill? Not really, I admitted carefully, afraid that I might get him in trouble. I'm certain you have many questions, but let me explain everything to you, and if you still have questions, you can ask me when I'm done. Alora had a coldness to her voice, and I doubted I'd ever be able to question her on anything. Trill are, to the layman, trolls, but that term is antiquated and demeaning, and as you can tell, it doesn't do us justice at all. Alora gestured to the expanse of the room, with all its grace and luxury, and I nodded. We are beings closely related to humans, but more in tune with ourselves. We have abilities, intelligence, and beauty that far surpass that of humans. There are two important distinctions to our lifestyle as Trill that separate us from the humans, Alora continued. We want to live a quiet life, communing with the earth and ourselves. We work to strengthen our abilities and use them to better our lives, to protect ourselves and the things around us. We devote our entire lives to this. Foreatening exists only to preserve and enhance the Trill way of life. The other distinction is how we maintain this lifestyle, although it isn't that different, really. She looked thoughtfully out the window. Human children have their schools, but these places prepare them for a life of servitude. That's not what we want. We want a life of complete and total freedom. That is why we have changelings. The changeling practice dates back hundreds, maybe thousands of years. Alora looked at me gravely, and I gulped back the growing nausea in my belly. Originally, we were forest dwellers, far less industrialized than you see now. Our children were prone to starvation and medical problems, and we did not have an adequate educational system. So we'd leave our babies in place of human children so they would have the benefits that only a human childhood could offer. Then, when they were old enough, they would come back to us. That practice evolved because we evolved. Changelings were healthier, more educated, and wealthier than the Trill counterparts that stayed behind. Eventually, every child born became a changeling. Of course, now we could easily match the benefits of the human population. But to what end? In order to maintain our current level of existence, we'd have to leave the solace of the compound and spend our lives doing menial jobs. That simply would not do. And so we leave our children with the most sophisticated, wealthiest human families. The changelings live a childhood that is the best this world has to offer, and then return with an inheritance from their host families that infuses our society with wealth. That, of course, isn't the only goal,
but it is a large part of how we can live like this. The money you obtain from your host family will support you for the rest of your life.
Wait, I'm sorry. I know I'm not supposed to interrupt, but...
I licked my lips and shook my head.
I just need to clarify a few points.
By all means, Alora said, but venom tinged her voice.
When I was a baby, you gave me to strangers to raise me so I could have a good education, a good childhood, and I would bring money back. Is that right?
Yes. Alora raised an eyebrow, daring me to question this. I wanted to yell so badly I was shaking, but I was still afraid of her. She looked like she could snap me in half with her mind, so I just twisted my thumb ring and nodded. She had dumped me off on a crazy woman who tried to murder me just because Alora never wanted to work and needed cash.
Shall I continue?
Alora asked without even trying to mask the condescending tone in her voice. I nodded meekly.
I don't even remember what I was saying.
She waved her hand in irritation. If you have any other questions, I suppose you can ask them now.
What are the vitrae?
I asked, trying to distract myself from how angry I was with her.
I don't understand who they are or what they wanted with me.
Foreatening is populated with Trill. Alora extended her arm in a wide gesture. The term Trill is a distinction similar to a tribe. We are trolls, and over the years the troll population has been dwindling. Our numbers used to be great, but now there are less than 1 million of us on the entire planet. We are one of the largest tribes left, but we are not the only one, Alora continued. The Vitrae are a warring faction, and they are forever looking to pick off some of us, either by turning us to their side or simply by getting rid of us.
So the Vitrae want me to live with them?
I wrinkled my nose.
Why? What could I do for them?
I am the queen. She paused, letting me take this in. You are the princess. You are my only child, the last of my legacy.
What?
I felt my jaw drop. You are the princess, Alora explained with a condescending smile. You will one day be queen, and being the leader of Trill carries great weight.
But if I'm not here, won't you just find a replacement? I mean, there's going to be a queen here even if I'm not,
I said, scrambling to make sense of this all.
There is more to it than that.
We are not all created equal, Alora went on. Trill are far more gifted than the others. You have already tapped into persuasion, and you have the potential for much more. Vitrae are lucky to have any abilities. Adding you to their ranks would greatly add to their power and influence.
You're saying I'm powerful?
I raised a sardonic eyebrow. You will be, Alora amended. That is why you need to live here, to learn our ways so you can take your rightful place.
Okay.
I took a deep breath and ran my hand along my pajama pants. None of this seemed real or made sense. The idea of myself as a queen was completely absurd. I barely managed to pass for an awkward teenager.
Finn will be staying to watch over you. Since they're looking for you, added protection would be prudent.
Alora ran her hand over her skirt, not looking at me.
I'm sure you have many more questions, but you'll get the answers over time.
Why don't you go get yourself cleaned up?
Wait,
I said, my voice small and uncertain. She raised her head, looking at me with disdain.
Where's my father?
Oh. Alora looked away from me and stared out the window. Dead. I'm sorry. It happened shortly after you were born.
Finn had promised me a different life where I belonged, but really, it seemed to be the exact same life with different trappings. My mother here seemed almost as cold as my fake mom, and in either life, my dad was dead. Also, I don't have any money. I shifted uneasily.
Of course you don't. You probably won't have access to your trust fund until you're 21. But with persuasion, you can get it sooner. Finn tells me you're very advanced with that.
What? I shook my head. No, I don't even have a trust fund.
I specifically chose the Everleys because of their wealth,
Elora said matter-of-factly. Yeah, I know you chose them for their money because it certainly wasn't for their mental health. I lowered my eyes, realizing I had been smart with her, but quickly plowed through it. My dad killed himself when I was 5, so none of his insurance paid out. My mom never worked a day in her life, and she's been in a mental institution for the past 11 years, which has eaten a lot of her funds. Not only that, we've moved around a lot and wasted tons of money on houses and tuition. We're not poor by any means, but I don't think we're anywhere near the kind of rich you think we are.
Stop saying we. They're not part of you. Elora snapped and sat up.
What are you talking about? The Everleys were one of the wealthiest families in the country. You couldn't have bled them completely dry. I don't know how much money they have, but we don't... I didn't live like they were that rich. I was almost shouting in frustration. And you weren't listening. I had a terrible childhood. My fake mother tried to kill me.
Elora seemed more shaken by my confession that my family wasn't loaded than she was about Kim trying to kill me.
She sat very still for a moment, then took a deep breath.
Oh, so she was one of those.
What do you mean by that? I pressed, and by now I was livid. I couldn't believe the casual, callous air that she had about my attempted murder.
One of those?
Oh, well. Elora shook her head as if she hadn't meant to say that.
Every now and again, a mother knows. Sometimes they hurt the child or kill them.
Whoa, whoa, whoa! You knew there was a chance that she might kill me? I snapped and stood up. You knew that I could die, but you just left me? You didn't care what happened to me at all?
Don't be so melodramatic. Elora rolled her eyes. This is the way we live. It's a very small risk, and it rarely happens. And you lived. No harm done.
No harm done? I pulled up my shirt, showing her the scar that stretched across my belly.